Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, February 4th, 2017. This is episode 1360. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by the Ring video doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/techguy and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit with their limited time offer. Hey, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers. The internet, I had to think. Home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, you know. Everything with a chip in it. Nowadays, it's pretty much everything, isn't it? 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still use Skype to reach us. 888-827-5536. That's toll free. Outside, as I said, you can use Skype because it's a toll free number. Skype out won't cost you anything. New FCC already moving quickly. Ajit Pai, the new chairman of the FCC, abandoning what I thought was a pretty exciting rule by the FCC that cable companies would have to allow you to use your own cable boxes, set-top boxes like Roku or Apple TV or Android TV. My current favorite, the NVIDIA Shield TV, which is just awesome. I just love it. No, won't be a set-top box. You know, I was very excited about the idea. I mean, here we are. We have to rent these terrible pieces of hardware from the cable company as a set-top box to decode it. If you want a DVR, it costs even more. But I realized probably the cable companies are just shooting themselves in the foot anyway, right? In fact, Comcast, I think, kind of realized this. They said, oh, we're going to allow you to use a Roku kind of in a limited way in some cases for the beta test. As a set-top box. So they're even maybe going ahead with this. I think the cable companies are starting to recognize that the writing's on the wall. People are going to get their television from the internet. They're going to have to make it up somehow, probably charging you more and giving you less internet. Which is interesting because that means the mobile companies have an opportunity. And, oh, there's something good for them from Ajit Pai. This is a tricky one. This is a hard one to explain. Because it sounds like it's a really good thing, and I think a lot of people like it. It's a thing called zero rating. The FCC was going to block it, and now under the new chairman, they've decided, no, it's a good thing, even though it violates net neutrality. The problem is consumers, on the face of it, sounds good. This is that thing where, well, T-Mobile calls it binge on, where if you're watching video from certain services or listening to music from certain services, it won't count against your bandwidth cap. You won't have to pay for it, in effect. It's just free data. And, of course, everybody loves that idea. What's wrong with that? What could possibly be wrong with that? So it's a little hard to explain to normal people why it's a bad idea. Let me see if I can and explain why saving money for you is a bad idea. It's not so much that that's a bad idea. It's that only some services are zero rated or binge on friendly. And some aren't. YouTube is not, for instance. And I don't worry about YouTube. I think Google's probably made their packet. They don't need to worry about it. I do worry about small companies trying to stream to your phone who won't be free. they're at a disadvantage. And so this is the concept of net neutrality, is that everybody be roughly or exactly equal on the internet. The bits be bits, and your internet service provider doesn't get to prioritize or not charge for some bits. Make them all free or charge equally for all of them, but you have to treat them the same. And can you see the logic of it, which is, yeah, that's great. You're going to get free Spotify and, you know, Apple Music, but it means it's harder for another company to come up and compete. They have a disadvantage. And the reason I'm sensitive to this is I'm a podcaster as well as I do the radio show, but I also do many podcasts. And, you know, our audio and video is not free on T-Mobile or Verizon or AT&T. You pay part of your bandwidth consumption. So we're at a disadvantage. And I don't even worry about me so much because I'm established. I worry more about the little guys, the new thing, the next big innovative idea that will have this, in effect, this tax because they're not part of Binge On. Now, the FCC wasn't about to ban it, but they were investigating it. That investigation's now dropped. The FCC sent letters to T-Mobile, AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast saying they've dropped those long-running inquiries. Through this letter, I am notifying your company the Bureau has closed this inquiry. And Ajit Pai confirmed, yeah, we're not, you know, net neutrality, schmet neutrality. He's kind of a known opponent in net neutrality, and I want to give him the benefit of the doubt because he has some good ideas. You know, the premise isn't a bad premise, that the competition and the free market should decide this stuff, not government regulators. And I am sympathetic to that. The last thing we want is the government to decide what's good on the internet and what's not, right? That would be bad. Almost as bad as having AT&T, Comcast, Verizon, and T-Mobile do it. Actually worse. So I don't want that either. The problem is we don't have really a free market, do we? Certainly not in land-based internet. Mobile maybe is a little more competitive. There's four big carriers and a lot of little ones. So maybe it's a little more competitive. Probably, of course, if you think about it, most users not acting in their own long-term interest will say, oh, I'm going to go with T-Mobile because they don't charge me for Spotify and Apple Music. That's a Pandora. That's good. That's free. I like that. And this is sometimes why you need government regulation because, you know, the government, a.k.a. society, us, might have to decide collectively that something that seems good for an individual isn't good for the community, isn't good for everybody. Net neutrality sometimes is one of those things where, you know, the individual might say, hey, this is great. I love this. Free internet. And not consider the longer term societal consequences. FCC also, as we're talking about it, they're stopping federally subsidized internet to the poor. Now, on the face of that, that sounds like that's pretty bad. Because after all, don't we want everybody to have the internet? That's access, isn't it? To education, to government, to, you know, society. It's important. And in many, you know, for a lot of people, it's a luxury compared to food. So, if you're broke, getting internet access is important, but you may not be able to do it. Now, I have to say it's perhaps a little more complicated than this because, according to Ajit Pai, this Lifeline program was poorly administered. It was intended to serve 13 million Americans who do not have broadband service at home. However, the way it was implemented without much government restriction or investigation apparently was not very fair. So, hey, I'm all if you want to cancel it and replace it with a program that actually works, I'm all for that. But I am a believer that internet, you know, I think in the long run it will not be replaced by a working program. And then the idea will be, hey, you know, you ought to pay for it. Why should the government give it to you for free? You ought to pay for it. But we'll see. I'll give him a chance. All about that. Big court case against Facebook and Oculus. Little company that invented Quake and Doom, ZeniMax, the owners of id Software, sued Facebook saying you stole that VR thing, the Oculus Rift thing. You stole trade secrets and destroyed evidence. And at least so far in the trial, which I think was occurring in Dallas, Big victory for ZeniMax for id Software. $500 million. $500 million Facebook will have to hand over. Of course, that's cigarette money for Mark Zuckerberg, if he smoked. This is he doesn't. It's free money. But I suspect they'll appeal. They don't want that hanging over their head. You know what? That's the best indicator that VR is succeeding, is when you start getting lawsuits, right? Among the companies doing it. You stole that from me. If there weren't money in it, nobody'd sue anybody. Let's talk tech. Enough of that. Enough of that. Enough politics and court stuff. Let's find out why Windows isn't working. 8888, or whatever your problem is. 8888, Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Excuse me.
We're going to the phones right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. If you want to talk high tech, I'd love to do it with you. And when you call that number, you'll be reaching this person right here, the phone ranger, Heather Hallman, in the house. Super Bowl Sunday tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do you have a dog in that hunt?
Oh, no. You?
Well, I grew up in Providence, so I guess I'm a Patriots fan. That's just down the road a little bit from Foxborough, although they didn't play there when I was a kid. But, yeah, I mean, you know.
I might just root for the underdog. Now tell me which one that is.
The underdog are the Atlanta Falcons, but they're only a 3-point underdog last time I checked the betting line.
So many things to bet on.
Yeah, I'm not a, you know, I don't gamble, because I think gambling is, by definition, gambling. Your money. I don't want to gamble my money.
Exactly.
Right?
It's funny, like over under on whether, you know, Luke Bryan wears jeans or
corduroy. Yeah, it's crazy, blah, all those propositions, yeah.
Whether Lady Gaga falls from the ceiling or...
They're betting on her hair now.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah. She's going to be the halftime show.
Yes.
And she's been teasing, you know, on Instagram, she's been posting all sorts of pictures saying, oh, what do you think? Oh. So she's
maybe
teasing the whole thing.
Maybe it's that.
Yeah.
We
she's
do know
smart.
Her hair will be teased, I bet.
Yes. She could have, you know, she could be wearing a meat gown. Who knows? You never know with the Lady Gaga.
It's
you
very
never
American.
Know. Yeah. I think she had a meat gown, didn't she, once?
She,
made out of steaks or something?
It was steak, yeah. So maybe this time hamburgers or hot dogs.
for the great American pastime.
Yeah, chicken wings.
Oh, yeah. I'm wearing a wings suit. Well, we'll talk in a little bit with Scott Wilkinson. He's coming up. He's going to help you buy a TV. This is like the last chance today, the last chance to buy a TV for tomorrow. So maybe sometimes there's some good deals. This is turns out to be a good time to buy. But more importantly, you've been lining up phone calls, and there are people, I can't believe it, already in the queue. Who should I start with?
Madly, yeah. Brian in L.A. really cracked me up with this question. I'll let him ask it.
Okay. Thank you, H.H. Brian, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Leo. I was about to call you today.
You call me anything you want. Just call me whatever you want. I will still answer.
Yeah. By the way, before I get to my question pretty quick, but my wife and I, we had a good time when we dropped into your... We're the blind couple that dropped into your studio about, a couple years ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And,
nice to see you again, to talk to you.
Yeah, we came up with this. We've got to be quiet on the set, but then I figured out later. His other people that visit.
Everybody else is noisy. Yeah. Why should you be quiet?
Yeah. Anyway, my question is: our doctor is it's about encryption, and my doctor's discovered encryption, and I wish he would undiscover it because
that's I could tell this is a source of dissatisfaction whenever you say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's discovered something. Oh, dear. So why? Is he encrypting all his email to you?
Yeah. So what it is now, on the face of it, it seemed like it might be okay. It says, well, you click this link. It takes you to GoDaddy. And you log in, and then you see your email. But not so much. Because for one thing, for some reason, to see the files, you have to click this extra button, and for some reason our access technology
You should tell him, you know.
Yeah,
it's not accessible because he's probably doing, you know, the Health Insurance Protection Portability Act, HIPAA, requires that physicians in particular protect patient records. And so, you know, just sending emails like sending a postcard, probably you wouldn't want to, you know, say you need to come in for a test because I'm really worried about something in a postcard. So for the same reason, you know, they might say, well, we're going to use some sort of technology. I'm sure technology he didn't invent. That he's, you know, licensing from somebody who provides physician services.
Yeah.
But you should definitely let him know that it's not accessible, that because that leaves you out. You can't read it.
Yeah. But how does it usually work? I mean, I figured from what I've heard you talk about this that you would, okay, you would provide this key or password, and then you'd just see your email like normal. But
he's not going to expect his patients to do that. So what they've got is some sort of simpler system. The way, you know, the good email encryption, which I recommend, is probably not ready for prime time. It's called, I use something called PGP, or actually I use an open source version of it called GPG, GNU Privacy Guard. But it's the same thing. It's what we call public key crypto. So you, if you want to be communicated with, you distribute a public key that can be seen by anybody. It's a one-way key. It can only encrypt. It can't decrypt. And then you keep privately, you know, to yourself, usually password protected, the private key, which you need to decrypt. So in order for this to work, your doctor would have to circulate his public key so you could write to him, and he'd have to have your public key so that he could write to you. And it requires setup. But you're right. Once it's set up, most email clients will automatically open encrypted email if it's encrypted with the proper key. The first time, you'll have to enter a password. And by the way, that may not be accessible, because one of the things these systems try to do is prevent keystroke logging. I bet you that's what his system is doing. And so they put it in these weird on-screen forms.
Yeah, you can't select it, for instance, and copy
exactly.
it in a document.
That's to prevent bad guys from somehow getting the information. But it isn't accessible. And so that's not good. I mean, I'm sure he has some alternative, like snail mail or a phone call.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, I don't care if the whole world knows about my bad knee.
I know, but the government does, and he's not allowed to. Fines are very strict for violating HIPAA. So I think that's probably the case, that he's using some service provided by a company, physician's encryption service, or maybe part of a larger office, physician's office package he has that does this.
Now, if he sends a file attachment, for instance, I should be able to read that normally, correct?
Well, he could. Yeah, that's another way he could do it. He could encrypt a file attachment. Again, he'd have to have a public key, your public key. He could encrypt it using your public key, scramble it. Then you'd get it as an attachment, which you could then open. And probably would it be up to you, but your software would be situated in such a way that you could read it with your screen reader. You know, it's funny. He's kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, because I'm sure there are rules about having you have access to it as well, right?
Yeah.
He's probably face-to-face with the ADA. HIPAA and ADA, or the American for Disabilities Act, are in competition with each other. So I think really that would – the argument would be for him – to explain that to him and say, you've got to find a physician's service that is accessible.
Yeah. Well, actually – and you can't do anything about this. Talking to him, he might as well be encrypted. That's what I was telling you.
Yeah, he probably doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know what's going on. He's trying to be compliant. His group or his hospital or his office, this is the choice. Maybe he made the choice, but this is the choice they made. And he probably doesn't understand it or have any control of it. But I am sure you can say, mail it to me or call. I bet you can do a phone call, because they have to provide an accessible solution for you. Of course, it's very complicated, you know, and this is, you know, I support it, but it gets messy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Interesting. It's an interesting problem, Brian. He's probably not the one who set it up, I would guess.
No. I just wondered if I could find some of the something to experiment with and find that something that may or may not.
So you click a link.
Yeah.
Goes to a website.
Yeah.
And then do you enter a password?
Yeah, that part works fine. What doesn't work fine is, for instance, there was a file he sent, and And there is a, the software refers to it as a radio button. You know, it's a button. That,
yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, those usually are clickable, but in this instance, yeah, they're not.
They're doing that on purpose. So PGP does that too. It opens a screen that isn't screen reader capable because it's basically bypassing the hardware and the computer to display the screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the reason isn't they're trying to block a screen reader. They're trying to block software that's sitting on your computer to gather that information.
Yeah.
It's really overboard, right? If somebody's on your computer trying to spy on your medical information, you got bigger problems than medical information.
Our tax preparer does something simple. She sends us an attachment, but we have to open it with a password, which...
That's perfectly fine, and I'm sure that's HIPAA compliant. So you might say, hey, could you do this? You know, what they would probably do is use ZIP or some other file compression technology that requires a password. The problem, you know, that's what we call a symmetric key, which means she uses the key and then has to tell you what the password is in some other channel, right?
Yeah, and it's a regular PDF, and JAWS reads that stuff pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So once it's So ask, you know, you just ask them, can you send us a PDF?
Yeah.
They may have in that software may have alternative solutions for accessibility.
Yeah. Well, we may, like I said, we may, you know.
Come back again and visit us. Where are you from?
Yeah, we will. We'd love
to. LA. Yeah.
Maybe we'll change doctors.
Yeah, change doctors. Yeah. No, help the doctor, because you know what? It's not just
him,
you trying to help, but he doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
He'll have an office manager or somebody like that who knows what's going on.
Yeah.
That's what you need to talk to us. Whoever set that up for him.
All right.
Hey, thanks. Great to talk to you, Brian. Best to your wife.
Thank you, Lou.
Take care. Bye-bye. The Badonk Badonk guy is here. That's that's our good friend Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek and guru. His podcast is called Home Theater Geeks at twit.tv/HTG. He also writes for AVS Forum, and he's already told us he will be watching the Puppy Bowl tomorrow and TiVoing the commercials.
That's right. I'm gonna record the game, and I'm going to zip through the game itself and watch the commercials and the halftime show. I do like Lady Gaga.
I do, too. I do, too.
I think she's got an excellent voice.
Yeah, she's a very good singer.
So, great singer. So I'll be watching that. You know, if I hadn't written about the Super Bowl and TVs for hosting a Super Bowl party and that sort of stuff, I wouldn't even know who was playing. I really don't care.
Geeks are not fans of, as they call it, sport ball. They just generally are not sport ball fanatics.
Well, you know, and probably because most of us, and I count myself in there, you know, weren't that good at PE.
Yeah, in high school were shamed. That's
why the last one picked for the team.
Yeah, that's how you got on the AV squad. And
exactly.
And the rest is history. The rest is history.
So, well, you know, okay, so it's the Atlanta Falcons and the New England Patriots, I
very
guess.
Nice. Well done. Bravo.
So I knew that, only because I had to write about it.
Now, last year, CBS had it. This year, it's Fox. CBS streamed it, as I remember, and they said 4 million viewers. Fox is expecting many, many more to be watching. And, in fact, they're putting on our website, foxsport.com. You don't have to have a cable subscription. So this is one football game all season long that you can watch without having a cable subscription.
But of course,
that would mean you'd put it on your computer there or on the app, the Fox Sports Go app.
Right, and apparently that's available on Apple TV, maybe some other platforms as well.
Yeah, Android TV. I'm a big fan of the NVIDIA Shield. You got to get one of these and give it a review.
I do have to give it
a 4K shot. Device. You know,
yeah, I wrote about the NVIDIA Shield. I included it in a list that I did of streaming devices, and it looked really interesting.
Fire TV from Amazon, Chromecast from Google, or Roku all have Fox Sports Go apps. So you can still watch it on a big screen. Usually when they do that, though, you don't get the commercials. You get – in fact, this is a kind of a pet peeve of mine. Mm. When I watch streaming shows with commercials, it's usually the same commercial – over and over, like every break.
Oh, man.
The same Captain Obvious commercial or something like that.
Oh, just, man, I hate those.
You get so sick of them. I wish they, but you know, this all comes from the fact that the companies that buy these multi-million dollar ads on the Fox network on television aren't paying for streaming. You'd think that Fox, just throw it in.
Yeah,
everybody
would
be happy.
Here's a little bonus for you.
Yeah. If you want to watch on your phone, you have to be a Verizon customer.
Well, I wonder if the if you really don't need a TV subscription to watch on Fox Sports Go on one of these other devices, because I do know, I don't know that, but I do know that Fox is offering for the first time pseudo virtual reality highlights that are being produced during the game.
You could use your Google Cardboard or your other VR.
Or your Gear VR, Samsung Gear VR. But you have to sign in with your television credentials.
Yeah. That's so you protect you the cable need, companies. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm wondering about whether or not you need that for just streaming the game.
They say not. In fact, I'm just looking now, and they also say you will get access to the national commercials and the halftime show. So that's Ooh. Nice. They're going to put the commercials in. So,
well, that's good because, as you know, as I just said, you know, I'm more interested in the commercials than I am the game itself.
Yeah, you need the Fox Sports VR app and then a Gear VR or Cardboard headset.
Right, to
but
get the VR.
Weirdly
it's
enough,
real VR.
It's not free either.
Oh,
no,
really?
In fact,
oh,
what
you, have to be a, you have to have,
you have, to have a cable. So what you're going to get is, and they do this, if you've ever used the like the Netflix viewer on your Gear VR, you know that the movie isn't 3D, the theater is. So right. This is they're going to do the same thing. You're going to be sitting in a living room.
No, I thought it was in a virtual skybox.
Yeah. Well, okay, whatever. Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of it. You can see it here. It's kind of it's a skybox. It's not let me see if I can find it. I just deleted it somehow.
Oh, it looked like you had a big screen TV.
You got a big screen TV on the left and then there's analysts sitting in a chair in the skybox. It's concrete.
Right.
Yeah, this is a college game because I see Penn State and Ohio Ohio State. But obviously, this is what the setup's going to be for the.
And it's not even VR because they've got six cameras located around the. I mean, they've got 50 cameras for the broadcast, but they've got six cameras dedicated to this VR thing. One in each end zone, one on either side of the 50-yard line, and a couple roving around. So it's not even, you can't even look around behind you. It's not a 360-degree, effect.
Well, I will watch it. I will do some of it on that, but I think I'm going to watch it on regular, everyday television.
And, boy, have you got a TV to watch it on, too.
Yeah,
that,
I do.
LG V6 OLED. Man, that's a nice TV.
Now, this is normally a good time of year to buy a TV anyway, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
For some reason, January's slow. But will we still have, if somebody wants to go to the store today... And get
if they've got any stock left, I suppose.
If it's still there, probably get a great deal on it, right?
Yeah, undoubtedly. Many people think, Black Friday is the best time to buy a TV, but it's actually in the weeks coming up to Super Bowl because not only are a lot of people interested in buying a TV, but this is the end of the model year for TVs. The 2017 models are going to come out in, April, March or April or May. So they want to get rid of, 2016 stock. So prices
are even
better.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote a big article about that, too. So go to AVS Forum and check it out.
And, if you've listened to Scott on this show, we've talked before about LCD versus OLED. Those are two different technologies. Sometimes they call LCD LEDs.
Yeah, and that's misleading because really they're using LEDs in the backlight of an LCD TV. So it's still an LCD TV. It has a backlight. The light shines through the LCD panel, and that's how you get the picture. Instead of using fluorescent tubes, they're using LEDs. That's the only difference.
Yeah. Then there's QLED, which isn't out yet, but you saw it at CES, which is even more confusing.
It is. It is absolutely more confusing. All that is an LCD TV with an LED backlight that's enhanced with this technology called quantum dots, hence the Q.
Yeah.
And that gives you better colors, more efficiency. There are a number of reasons why it's a good thing, but Samsung's name for it is pretty confusing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so for Super Bowl, if you're going to host a party, I recommend either an OLED, if you can afford it, or an LCD TV with a wide viewing angle. Because you're going to have a lot of people in the room watching the Super Bowl, and some of them are going to be pretty far off axis, which means away from dead center. So getting a LCD TV with a wide viewing angle is going to be good for that particular application.
Yeah, yeah.
And don't get a curved TV.
Well, oh, yeah, because unless you're watching all by yourself.
Exactly. And especially in the Super Bowl, you're not. You have a big group of people.
You one hopes not,
One, right. And off to the side, they're going to really have a poor experience with a curved TV.
Yeah.
So
don't
get a curved TV.
Yeah.
I don't like them anyway. I don't recommend them anyway. But in this case, it's particularly bad.
Yeah. Well, here it comes. The big, I think, is this the biggest TV show of the year? Maybe next to the Oscars? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Biggest
I don't know.
TV show of the year. They expect, I think, 100 million viewers in the U.S.
It's certainly one of the biggest, no doubt about that.
If you want to know more about home theater, go to twit.tv/HTG, the Home Theater Geeks podcast, and read Scott's great work at the avsforum.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your calls next. The other thing about curved TVs is you get more reflections. There's something about it captures more of the reflected light. Which
if you have like a lamp, a point source essentially,
it goes all the way across it.
It becomes a line on the
TV. So annoying.
I know.
Thanks for the invention. Jeez.
And now the manufacturers are basically abandoning it. There are virtually
none left. Oh good. That's nice to know.
Samsung is, again, Samsung is a holdout in a couple of ways. For one thing, they still have curved TVs.
Right.
Their flagship is not. That's kind of interesting. Their 2017 flagship is not.
Oh, that's good.
But then the one down from it is. And they also are the last major company to not implement Dolby Vision high dynamic range.
Really?
Which was a big, big story, I think, at CES. Was a lot of companies, LG implemented it last year. This year, Sony, LG kept it, of course. Sony implemented it. A bunch, some other companies also had it. Samsung was the only holdout, really. And why that is, I don't know. I mean, Dolby Vision does require some licensing fee and powerful enough hardware to handle it. But, you know, that's really not a big deal these days. And if these other companies went for it, I think that that's an indicator.
Well, I'm going to give it to you for the next 167 seconds.
Thank you so much.
And you're good for the top of the hour?
Yeah, I am.
All right. Have fun.
Thank you. Luca Rum T said the Oscars only get $30 million. If that's true, then, yeah, the Super Bowl's much bigger. Might be the biggest TV show of the year. Let's see. Marsworm is asking why my AVR stopped working pass-through mode. I've been turning on my off my AVR to listen to Twit on just my TV, but now today my TV will turn itself back on after a few minutes. Wow. That's pretty weird. I don't really get why that would be. You've got like a couple of problems going on there. That sounds like a call to the customer service company to me, the customer service of the maker of the AVR. Emily the Strange, how are you? Good to see you. Buckmaster asks, do you know any way to adjust 3D crosstalk ghosting on a projector? I've been having an issue with my Epson Pro Cinema 6010. No, there is no real way to adjust that as far as I know. I'll have to do a little research to see. I don't recall if they have a control for how much of the time each eye's image, the left image and the right image, if there's a way to adjust the amount of time that they're both off, then that might be a helpful thing. But I have to look into that. So I will try to look into that. And if I can, I'll add it to my list of questions. I wanted to point out to everybody that I've got a new initiative on AVS Forum, which is called Ask the Editors. And we've been doing this for a while, but we really wanted to ramp it up. So I put a note on AVS Forum. If you go to avsforum.com, you'll see it at the top there. And we've already answered a number of questions that are also there on the homepage. But we love to answer questions. And with that format, we have time to, you know, do a little research if we need to, such as for this question, to find out, you know, whether or not the 6010 has some sort of crosstalk adjustment. I don't think it does, but I haven't looked at Epson menus in a while. So, and also 6010 is, that's like 3 years old, 3 or 4 years old. They're now up to the 6040.
Our show today brought to you by Epson, those great Epson EcoTank printers. Don't you love those? Oh, you don't know them? Have you got one? I got two. I got two, and I probably got more in my future because I just love this whole idea. Epson EcoTank printers are cartridge. They're inkjets, but they don't use cartridges. They have ink tanks on the side of them. Let me get the website up for you and show you. It's really awesome. Epson.com, EPSON.com/EcoTank. For years, I mean, I've always used Epson printers. Going back to the dot matrix days, right? The MX80, the FX80, and then after that, you know, I've been using their inkjets. Their lasers. I'm an Epson fan, but when they came out with this, I thought, oh, you guys are taking a big chance, right? You're putting 2 years of ink in the box. So I just load up. We have the ET4550, this one right here. 11,000 pages of ink in the box, or 8,500 color pages of ink in the box. And then when it's time to buy more ink in 2019, I love that. It's 80% less expensive because it comes in the replacement bottles. Just love this idea. Now, they need to get the word out because I think people just, they don't understand. Wait a minute. You're telling me that Epson is going to forego, you know, the cartridges and 20,000 pages in between refills? And, of course, it's the Precision Core engine in many of these. That's the high-end industrial engine. It gives you 40 million droplets of ink every second. So you've got very crisp black and white. They've got auto two-sided printing. They've got 30-page auto document feeder that really works. Of course, you can print wirelessly, and even from your tablet or your smartphone. It supports all the protocols. When I scan, I usually just – I could scan to my computer, but I also scan to Google Cloud because I'm often scanning and sharing. So I just scan right to the cloud, and then I share it. It's awesome. All EcoTank printers from Epson deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value. The freedom to print without running out of ink. No wonder they won CES's 2016 Innovation Awards and the 2016 Small Business Windows Printers of the Year. Epson.com/EcoTank. Transform the way your home, your office, your work group prints. That's Epson.com/EcoTank. Epson. Exceed your vision. Love them.
Love them.
Leo Laporte. I got it right here. 8888. Ask Leo. Arthur is in Los Angeles. Our next caller. Hello, Arthur.
Hi. Hey, Leo. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, anyway, so I wanted to do the American dream and be my own boss. So I did a business plan, and a big part of my business plan was getting a website, a functioning website up. That was a one-person operation. And so I went to Yelp and looked for a bunch of, reputable web designers. And I went to the ones, or I made a list of about 20 that had the least amount of negative reviews.
That's good.
Talked to about 10 of them. Most of them did not like my budget. One of them, after talking to this one guy.
What is your budget, out of curiosity?
Trying to do it under $10,000.
Yeah, you're going to have a hard time finding a web designer. Probably your best bet is a college kid.
That's kind of where I went with this. So I got a recommendation from one of these guys, and I signed a contract, or I talked to him a few times, told him what I wanted, put together a contract. He signed it. I gave him about half of it up front. And
this is the problem with college kids.
Exactly. So, about 7 months later, and no money, and the guy is out of town.
Yeah.
You know, I have no website, so I'm now trying to see where can I go to, do this. Obviously, I may have to cut down my functionality, but where can I go to a reputable person that could kind of.
So this is a challenge. Web design is expensive, partly because web designers are at a premium, right? A good web designer can go to a big company and make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Making a website involves two distinct skills as well. There's a graphics skill, an artistic skill, making it look good. And there's an engineering skill because in many websites, there's some coding involved. So that's
what I want is a coder, a website coder, and I'm willing to cut down on the design. I don't care what it looks like.
What kind of functionality do you need? I mean, most websites are pretty straightforward.
Okay, so I want to obviously, when I create the profile pages for the people that sign up, I need to have a searchable thing. So when I'm dealing with another entity, I could send over whatever things that they want, specifically pictures or whatever people they want specifically. And then it being able to charge my people on a regular, on an easy basis and all this kind of stuff.
If I were you, I would look at, there are a number of companies that provide, in your budget, Terry Range, it's going to be very hard to find somebody reliable. You know, the college kid route is good, but the problem with college kids, remember Mark Zuckerberg was a college kid when he created Facebook. Of course, if you saw the movie, you also remember that, and I'm not going to weigh in on the truth or merits of this, but that two other students had the idea, came to him, paid him to write it. He said, "Oh, I think I could do this myself and better," and took the money, but never gave him a site. So this is a problem with college kids in general. They may be very good, but they're young and they don't have a lot of experience in the business world. And maybe they're a little fly by night. I would say for most people, the best place to start is with one of the companies that provides kind of prepackaged websites. You'd be amazed at the functionality you can get from many of these. There's of course, our sponsor, Squarespace. There's another sponsor, WordPress.com. There's Wix and Weebly. And I can go on. Even GoDaddy, which in the past I've kind of not recommended, has put in a new web building tool. It's pretty good. And believe it or not, a lot of the functionality you just described is available as plugins or the like. So what I would do is I would go, let's use Squarespace as an example. WordPress.com is very similar in this regard. You go there. I'm familiar with those two. I'm less familiar with Wix and Weebly, but I think it's probably the same. You go there. You sign up for an account, and they will have a directory of people who will help you customize their platform. And everything you just described, the login, the web search, the commerce, is pretty much built in on most of these platforms. So I think – and much less expensive. My wife started a business, an ad agency, and went to Squarespace.com and found, I think it was $5,000 and then a monthly fee, a very talented designer/programmer who understood the Squarespace platform. See, that's why you find them through the company, Squarespace or WordPress.com or Wix or Weebly. You find them through the company because those are people who are like advertising the directory there. I'm an expert in this. And we got a great site for a lot less money. I'll give you the contrasting situation. So to create the Tech Guy Labs site, we went to a very good company, one of my favorite companies. They're a Drupal developer. And it cost us, I think it was $200,000. And that's cheap. Lullabot's the name of the company. And that's cheap. They gave us a deal. For the twit.tv site, we spent also about $250,000. That's cheap, believe it or not, for a custom site from scratch. Particularly for the kind of the back end stuff we wanted to do, the programming, the custom code, and all of that. It is very expensive to do a professional website. Since you're interested in creating a company that might then be purchased by somebody, what you need to create is what's sometimes called in the business a minimal viable product. It's almost a proof of concept. This is how it would look, this is how it would work. I think you'd be much better off with something less expensive and simpler through one of the existing platforms. That's because all of the groundwork is already done on Squarespace and WordPress and Wix and Weebly. You're just getting somebody to customize it for you. It's gotten out of control. It really has, because you have to have a website. Every business has to have a website. And I think as a result, these companies that kind of have it used to be very cookie cutter site builder type stuff that wasn't great, but there's so much demand for this now that you can almost always find a very nice, very customizable, very functional site that is based on one of those packages. So that would be my recommendation. I like Squarespace a lot. That's where my site is, squarespace.com. And again, disclaimer, they have sponsored many of my podcasts. In fact, if you listen to podcasts, you probably have heard Squarespace ads. I think they advertise on every podcast known to man. Take a break. We'll come back with more just around the corner. We're going to talk to Scott in Hesperia. He has two hard drives, one computer. We'll see how we can help there. But before we do that, let's talk about backup, and let's talk about Carbonite online backup. You know I'm a big fan. I've been using Carbonite since the very beginning, since before they were a sponsor, because they provide a product that gets the job done, a very simple solution. You turn it on, you set it, you forget it. It's automatically backing up whenever you're online. You make a change to a file, it's backed up immediately. It's not like every Sunday backup. It's all the time backup. And this is super important, it's backing it up to the cloud where your stuff is safe, even safe from viruses and malware. Many security experts, and I'll include myself in this, say a good backup is the first line of defense against malware. If you get ransomware, you know about this ransomware, and they scramble all your files, you could thumb your nose at the bad guy if you've got a good backup locked up in the cloud. That's Carbonite. Go to Carbonite.com for home, for office, for Mac, for PC. There's a free trial just right for your particular needs. You don't need to give them a credit card either, so free. All you have to do is give them my name, Leo, when you sign up. That's the offer code, and that way you'll get 2 months free with purchase. You got to back it up to get it back, so do it right with Carbonite. Scott, Hesperia, California, two drives, one computer. What's the problem, Scott?
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
So what I just bought a new computer. I have a very old computer currently. Came with Vista, upgraded it to 7 and then 10.
Okay.
So it's got a lot of legacy hardware on there that I'd have to probably purchase again to put on a new Windows 10.
Yeah, don't expect to take anything with you. I guess you could take the keyboard, mouse, and monitor.
Yeah, so what I'd like to do is just take that hard drive out, put it in the new computer, and then on the odd occasion when I need to go back to it.
You can do that.
To that second.
Yeah,
drive.
You could do it if you have a desktop, or you can get an enclosure, a USB enclosure, put the drive in that, and then when you need to plug it in. Don't expect to run the computer off the old hard drive. I know you don't want to. You're going to have a fresh install on the new computer's hard drive, but your data will be there. Think of it as a kind of a backup. You still want to do all those other backup things, right? And you probably want to put the data on the main drive for speed. But if you ever needed stuff from the old computer, that hard drive is there. So yes, you could either put it in as a second drive. My suggestion is buy a USB enclosure, put it in there. Does that make sense?
Well, my plan is to of course back up all the data.
Yeah.
And put it on the new drive.
Right.
But I do want to continue. Again, not every day, but on the odd occasion, be able to run the old software on the old.
No, that's okay. That's different. Data is one thing. Software is another thing. As you remember, when you install a program on Windows, it doesn't just put a file, an .exe file, in the program folder, and that's it. It does stuff in the registry. It puts DLLs in the Windows directory. It spews files all over the hard drive. Those will not be accessible if you're running Windows on a different drive.
Well, so I'm asking the question the wrong way. What I essentially want to do is dual boot, but from two separate
hard drives instead of... Well, I guess you might be able to do it. That's a chance. Yes. Okay, so yes. The problem is that old hard drive is really for an old... It has all the drivers for old hardware, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
So you might... What you can often do is delete all the device drivers, put the new drive in, boot to it. It'll do plug and play. It'll update it. And if you're... With any luck, it'll kind of work. You'll have some problems. But then you will be able to use those old apps because you're now using your old copy of Windows.
So
it's going to be finicky.
Yeah.
Now, the trick of dual booting, there's you could do it in hardware, of course, but you could also put on the new computer in the master boot record, you could put a boot manager. There are a lot of, if you Google boot manager, you'll find a lot of different boot managers that will, when you start up the machine, say, oh, I see you have two copies of Windows. Which one do you want to run today?
Okay. Now, I saw that online. I didn't really understand what it was telling me. So just look for a boot.
You know, here somebody kind of has a good suggestion. This is actually maybe a better way to do it, is to buy a virtual machine. You can even use the free one that's available from Oracle, which is called OneBox, or you get VMware, and then have that second drive be running in a virtual machine. Then you won't have any issues with drivers and all of that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got to think that through, but that's interesting.
That VirtualBox or VMware, VirtualBox is free, would be probably the easiest way to do this.
So then I would go ahead, put the old hard drive in the new computer, but
yeah,
it just as a secondary drive, but then
and
I point...
Install VMware on your new computer and say, here's the installation.
Perfect. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, it doesn't have to work great. It doesn't have to work all the time. Just once
in a while,
when I need it, I need it.
In all likelihood, it'll be faster because that new computer is so much faster than your old Vista machine.
Oh, yeah.
So in all likelihood, this will be a better solution. Hey, I have to run because poor Scott's sitting there patiently waiting. Thank you, Scott.
I'm nothing if not patient. I'm happy to wait.
Yeah, you have to be on this show. I have to appreciate it here. Let me give you your clock. And you have 5 minutes there.
Okay, cool. Well, hi, everybody. Glad to be here with you. Having some fun in the chat room here. Luca Rumpt, was joking with me a little bit, and I thought he was serious. So, you know, you sometimes can't tell in the chat room. Veg Out was asking, how long is it going to be till we get an OLED for $1,000, 55-inch OLED for $1,000? I don't know. LG does drop its prices pretty radically. It has a history of it anyway. But OLED production is still pretty expensive, I think. And that is limiting the amount, I think, that they can drop the prices. The yields are still not that great, so I hear. The 55-inch B6 entry-level OLED on Amazon is now less than $2,000. So... you know, used to be well over three. So, you know, they're dropping. And somebody came up with a great point here. I can't see it off at the moment about how now there's competition. Sony has an OLED. And so maybe that'll force LG's prices down or Sony's as well. I don't think so. Sony always charges a premium for its TVs and other products because they're Sony. So they're going to be above LG's pricing, I think, anyway. So I'm not sure how much pressure that's going to put on LG to lower their prices. We'll see. He asked if it was going to be, sooner than later, less than a year. I don't know. I do not have a crystal ball or a direct line to the head of LG. Ken Crayley's here. Hey, Ken, how you doing? What's the toughest home theater question you've ever gotten? Oh, I'd have to think about that. I guess for the most part, they're the ones that I don't know the answer to. And I either have to go research or there's no way for me to know. Like, for example, is it going to be less than a year before we get a $1,000 55-inch OLED? There's no way for me to know that. So I suppose that might be. Luca Rumti, we were also talking about the LG Wi-Fi issue. And that has to do with their new 5K computer monitor, which apparently, if it's sitting near a Wi-Fi router, it has problems. It stutters, or I just looked it up. Let's see. LG apologized for any inconvenience. Let's see. Customers noticed the display flickered or switched off when near a Wi-Fi router. Okay. That's a problem. I would agree that's a big problem. I've never heard of anything like that with a TV. Of course, course, I don't know how many people have a Wi-Fi router near their TV. Probably some do, but I don't know of any. And if there had been such a problem, I'm sure we would have heard about it. But I haven't anyway. Of course, that doesn't mean that it hasn't happened. I can't hear everything all the time. I try to keep up as much as I can. Loquacious, good to see you as always. Yes, yes. Chat room can be a bit tricky in that regard. What's a joke and what's not? And Winnipeg Jets is the second person, I think, unless you've changed your screen name, to ask me, what about these plasma hybrids I've been hearing about? I don't know. I have not heard of plasma hybrids, so I need to go look into that, because if that's really a thing, that could be really interesting. Dr. Mom has no problem with the setup. Yay! I'm so glad. Let's see. Ken Crayley asks, should I wait to get a 4K Ultra HD TV or dive in right now and get one? Depends on your needs, really. I mean, if your current TV is dying or dead, then I would say if you're looking for a new TV, get a 4K Ultra HD one with high dynamic range. And in specific, get one with Dolby Vision as well as HDR10. Because I think Dolby Vision is a better system, and I think we're going to see more content come out in Dolby Vision than we have so far. Up till now, there are no UHD Blu-ray discs that have it, but I was assured at CES that some studios, in fact, will be encoding Dolby Vision on their UHD Blu-ray discs, which is an option. They have to have HDR10. That's it.
Hey, thanks, Scott.
My pleasure.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. We're talking about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still reach us. Just use Skype, and Skype out will work just fine. I kept talking to our last caller of the hour, last hour on the line, because the chat room had a good suggestion. You may remember our last caller was saying, I have an old computer, I'm buying a new computer, but I want to keep my old hard drive. And what he told me after we got off the air is, I want to keep it so I can run programs from the old hard drive. You know, keeping the old hard drive is no big deal as a, like for data, but you can't run programs, you know, the way Windows works, from a separate disk usually doesn't work. You need to be booted into the version of Windows on that disk, because there's stuff in the registry, there's stuff in the Windows directory, there's DLLs, there's all sorts of stuff that the program might need that isn't just available by double-clicking the program icon. However, the chat room came up with a very nice suggestion, which is to get that new computer, get it all up and running, take the old computer's hard drive out, put it in the new computer, or, as I said, put it in a USB enclosure so you can connect it, and then install VirtualBox or VMware or some other virtual machine program on your new computer and have it use the old install of Windows as its virtual installation. And that way, you can, without rebooting, you can just run all your old programs in a virtual window. We will put a How-To Geek article in the show notes at techguylabs.com. That's the website that explains how to do this. With VMware makes a program called vCenter Converter that will take a physical Windows hard drive and turn it into a virtual machine. Clever, which you can then run at the same time as you're running your brand new Windows. So that's for VMware. Microsoft has one for Hyper-V. Parallels has one called Parallels Transporter Agent. Now, VirtualBox, which is a great solution because it's free. It's a free virtual machine. You know what a virtual machine is? I love these ideas, and we're seeing more and more of this. The idea is you're running an operating system, and then you run a program in that operating system called a virtual machine. And that program can have a separate boot disk, computer disk, can have different operating systems just running in a window on top of your Windows. So a lot of people on Macs use this to run Windows on a Mac. You'll be running the Mac software. Then you run VirtualBox or VMware Fusion or Parallels, and it's got a window of its own, and you install you know, windows into there, and now you have your own separate Windows machine running inside the Macintosh. It, actually, increasingly in enterprise, we're seeing this more and more often as a way to even just run a program in a safe way. Because a virtual machine is isolated from the main operating system. A lot of people are saying, well, how can I? I'd like to run my browser in a way that it's, we sometimes use the word, in a sandbox. It's in a protected environment that if I get malware or I get something bad, it can't leak into my main environment. And virtual machines are a great way to do that. There's a new technology that's related, similar, called Docker, or this is a container technology that's even simpler than a virtual machine and may even be the future of computing. I think it's just a matter of time before, instead of running programs on an operating system, which is, you know, security-wise challenging because those programs can then modify the operating system, put malware on your hard drive, we'll start running programs inside of containers where they're isolated. The operating system will run, the container will run within the operating system, and inside the container will be your browser or your spreadsheet or your accounting program, whatever it is. And each program will have its own little bubble that it lives in. This is how it's being done on servers now more and more often. And enterprises and business, very common to see containers. The best known is Docker, very popular. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you want to talk high tech. We don't have to get that geeky. David and El Segundo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, David.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I had a question. I use Wi-Fi on my Android phone and then tether that Wi-Fi to my computer.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, is there any security issues?
No, in fact, that might be a more secure way to do it than just having a Wi-Fi router in your house. So the tethering is, you're using a cable to tether, right?
Right, a USB tether.
So that's not wireless, that's invisible. Then your wireless connection is coming from your phone company, your cellular provider, right? And that's an encrypted connection to your cellular company. So in many ways, that's more secure. It's certainly no less secure than using the internet on your phone. And no attacker who's sitting on your curb can see what's going on.
What if the wireless connection to the phone is unsecured, like it's at a Starbucks or...
Then the same problems apply as if you did on a laptop, which is... So if you're using the Wi-Fi on your phone at a Starbucks, then you... You know, the nice thing is what's happening on your computer is somewhat isolated by the tethering. Nevertheless, everything you're doing is going through the visible Wi-Fi at the Starbucks, right? So the attack scenario is somebody can be sitting at Starbucks watching your Wi-Fi traffic float through the air. They can capture it. It's an easy thing to do. They also can see your machine. This is becoming more of a more common attack. They can see your phone on the internet, and they could attack that phone. They probably can't attack the laptop. But they can attack the phone because they can see the Wi-Fi on the phone. So you would probably want to secure your phone. Anytime you're using an open Wi-Fi access spot, you want to secure your devices as best you can, usually by using a VPN, a virtual private network.
Okay.
That'll mean everything that's traveling through the air there will be scrambled. In fact, your conversation on the internet, which eventually does have to emerge onto the internet unscrambled, will emerge downstream at wherever that VPN server lives, whether it's your house, your business, or if you're buying VPN service from a company at their server. That's where you'll emerge onto the public internet, far away from that open Wi-Fi access point, far away from your attacker.
Okay.
So I do encourage people to do that. There are good, easy ways to do it, even with your phone. I use something... a little device called the Tiny Hardware Firewall. I always recommend people take a look at this. It's tinyhardwarefirewall.com. Lots of ways to do this, but it's an inexpensive little router that pairs to the Starbucks Wi-Fi and then connects to your phone and sits between your phone and the Starbucks Wi-Fi. And that's really a good way to be very safe. The negative on all this is it adds overhead. It slows things down because you're going through additional servers, et cetera.
Okay.
But when I use open Wi-Fi access spots, I always use some sort of VPN.
Okay.
Okay.
I had another question, if you don't mind me asking.
Yeah.
I was wondering, do you ever put the in between conversations on the podcast, I always noticed that
we used to do that, and I forgot if we're doing it still. I think we stopped. So, you know, if you've ever watched Don Imus do his radio show, or who was it did the sports talk show? Dan Patrick did his sports talk show, and you could watch. You know, they'd go into commercials as we do here, and then you could continue to watch as they're you know, jawboning with the staff and so forth. And we do the same thing. We stream it, and we offer a podcast. We stream it live at my website, twit.tv, or on YouTube, youtube.com/twit, so you could watch that. And we used to put it in the podcast, and I don't know what the current policy is. So are you saying you listen to the podcast and you don't hear any of the in-between chatter anymore?
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know why we did that. I think maybe to keep it under 3 hours. Because, of course, if we include all the breaks, it is, in fact, a three-hour show. But you like that, huh?
It's the best part.
Yeah, that's what I think. But then I'm prejudiced. All right, well, let me talk to Josh, who does the editing, and see what we're doing. I'll take your vote into account. You'd like to hear the in-between stuff. I often continue with calls and so forth in the break, so there is good juicy stuff there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. That's the number. Tom in Edgemore, South Carolina, call. Hey, Tom.
Well, hello, Leo. The voice. It's such an honor to speak with you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for calling.
I had a question. I'm wondering, I never hear you guys talk anything about solar electric.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I have it at home, and I love it. I also drive an electric vehicle, so it's kind of a nice feeling when I drive around to think, I made the juice that's powering this vehicle.
Yeah. It
feels good.
Well, I have neighbors. I have at least, there's three neighbors very close to me, and all of them have got the panels they put up on their roof.
An interesting thing happened in 2016. At least in some areas, solar became less expensive than traditional electricity. You know, coal fire or gas fire or nuclear or whatever. So, I mean, I should look up the actual, you know, details of this, because I'm sure nuclear is, once you take the cost of building the plant, is probably cheaper. But last year, solar started to really take off because panels got less expensive and efficiency went up. And that's the key, yeah, is getting the efficiency up, because they're not very efficient.
It's like 22%.
Yeah, if we can get them up to 30 or 40%, suddenly the equation really flips. And there'd be no reason, if you live in an area with a lot of sun anyway, not to have solar. I'm very happy. We save a little bit of money on our electric bill. Not a lot. We did what's called, there's different ways to do this. We did a power purchase agreement, which means we don't own the panels. Solar City, right, which is one of the big companies, this is one owned by Tesla. Solar, right, City installs them and puts them in and runs them for 20 years. And then all you have to do is guarantee to buy your electricity from them at a fixed rate. The fixed rate is, of course, carefully calibrated to be slightly less expensive than the local power utility. So I save money, and Solar City can still make money somehow, I guess, by reselling, mm-hmm, it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think you don't have it, or you're considering it? Is that why? Or?
Well, considering it, yes. You know, I was just wondering if there's maybe some improvements coming up. Maybe some,
yes. Yeah. So as with many technologies, as you make more and more of them, you get better and better at making them cheaper and cheaper, and that we're already seeing. You see, I mean, the first iPhone cost Apple a lot to make. The billionth iPhone, a lot less. So we're certainly seeing, yeah, that with solar panels as well. You know, one of the things driving this is China. China not only makes a lot of solar panels, but they've invested heavily into the technology. They would like to go solar. They have a massive air pollution problem in China. Massive. People are dying. I was in Beijing a few years ago, and it was horrible. You could barely breathe, and you certainly couldn't see very far. And it's like smoking a pack of cigarettes every day. It's terrible. So they really want to go solar. I did see a lot of solar panels when I was there, and they've got many, many more even since then. So I think it's I love to see this, and I think it's possible that you know it would be possible, for instance, to establish a large solar array in the Southwest where the sun is almost constant. That would be provide enough power, if you could distribute it, to power the entire United States. We could go all renewable, and I think that that would be great. It would it would eliminate our dependence on foreign oil. It would reduce the costs of electricity, and maybe even most importantly, it would reduce the burden on the environment of electricity generation.
There are some utilities that are producing that on the solar farms.
Yep. And wind power in certain areas is also very efficient, very good. And there are other ways. You know, there's hydroelectric. There are a lot of ways to do renewable. If we focus on making this a part of our energy strategy going forward, I think, you know, we could make a massive improvement in the United States, at least, and I would hope globally, in our economies, in our power, because we use a lot of power. We'd like to keep doing that. But, you know, we're going to run out of fossil fuels at some point.
That's right. Yep. On a side note, I'd like to thank you for your podcast. I took you with me just recently. I went to Africa.
I'm jealous. How was that? Did you go on safari? What did you do?
No, we didn't go on safari. We have a student that has become basically more than one of these students have become our sons.
Oh, that's so great.
We went with him. He's a professional soccer player.
Oh, wow.
We went with him back to his home in Uganda.
Wow.
And so we had a built-in guide and interpreter or whatever, although they speak English over there, too. So I used your podcast on the plane and some of the downtime we had because I was there about 24 days.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Sounds like a wonderful trip. I'm jealous. That sounds like I've always wanted to go. I will at some point. I should mention, we not only do a podcast of this show. In fact, many of our local stations also do, so you should certainly check your local stations. But our podcast version of this show is available from techguylabs.com, our website, but also from, I run a podcast network about 2005, started doing this, the Tech Guy Show in 2004 in Los Angeles. And in late 2004, this young guy I'd known for a while, I think he was 16 or 17, Bischoff was his name. He called me up and said, have you ever heard a podcast? I think he called me on the show. I said, no, I haven't. What are they? So well, you take the audio of the radio show and you make it an RSS feed and people can download it and subscribe to it and get it every week. I said, oh, I like that. He said, well, you should do that. So that weekend, after I got off the show, I looked into it and it was pretty easy to do it. I'd already been putting the shows up on the website so you could just download the show, but I made a podcast out of it so you could subscribe. And that went so well. A year later, I created another one and another one, and now I'm up to I host 10 podcasts, 9 or 10 podcasts every week, and then I have a staff, about 25. We do other podcasts. They're all around tech, because that's all I care about. We do a bunch of tech podcasts at TWIT. The podcast network is This Week in Tech, and you find it at twit.tv. And it's become my full-time job. I quite enjoy it. I do the radio show, and then after the show, I keep doing other shows all week long. So I'm glad that you listen. And I don't generally talk about solar because, I don't know why. I mean, it's not really a – is it – does it have a chip? I guess it does have a chip in it. I don't think of it as consumer electronics, but I'm a huge fan. You know, what's happening, of course, is utilities are pushing back. Here in California, our public utility, Pacific Gas and Electric, really sees itself. I think they see themselves as in the business of building power plants. So they limit how many solar panels. You can only put enough solar panels to cover your own need on your home. They look at, well, how much electricity have you used? Well, you can't put more than that. They don't want you generating. And that seems like a kind of a foolish point of view, but of course they're a for-profit business, so I'm just glad they let me do it at all. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ooh-ha! It's time for Johnny Jet, our travel guru. He's literally, well, not literally. He's almost been everywhere. Have you been to Winnemucca, Jack?
No, I haven't.
All right, see? So there you go. He hasn't been everywhere. But he's been most places. Every time I talk about traveling with Johnny, he says, oh, yeah, I've been there. Johnny is, of course, a travel guru. Now read every month in the Alaska Airlines In-Flight magazine. Congratulations, John. That's so great.
You saw that post. Yes.
I did.
Pretty exciting.
Well, I read Johnny Jet religiously. I go to johnnyjet.com. That's where I get my travel information. I sign up for the travel newsletters. I, of course, use your fare finder. I follow you on the Twitter, at Johnny Jet. Oh, no, on Instagram. I follow you everywhere, John. So I know what's going on with you. I know more about you than your wife does.
You the man. So and you would know, by the way, I just sent the deals newsletter out this morning that if you want to go to Australia, American Airlines has an incredible deal. $750 round trip to Sydney from most major cities, even not even major. I haven't seen Pittsburgh, but New York, Miami, L.A., $750 to like $762 round trip. That's about 50% off. So I just put a ticket on hold for next month.
I got a question for you, though.
Yes.
Have you ever traveled economy to Australia?
I have, actually. It's not fun.
And it can be a brutal flight. What is it, a 15, 20-hour flight from L.A.?
It's 14 and a half from L.A. Yeah. But if you're going to Sydney, if you're going to Melbourne, it's a little bit longer. If you're going to Brisbane, it's a little bit shorter.
It can be brutal. But it's a brutal flight.
My way to go to Australia, I love, is to stop in Hawaii, spend the night, and then it's only 10 hours.
Oh, that's a nice idea. And you get a night in Hawaii.
Exactly. Or stop in, you know, Fiji or Tahiti. Tahiti's exactly halfway from L.A. to Sydney. So it's 8 hours each.
Sometimes you just want to bite the bullet and just go, right? Not just, you know, I'm not going to stop. I'm just going to go. Just going to get there.
Yeah, but if you get the bulkhead, like on the coming home, I don't mind getting premium economy. Coming home, it's only 12 and a half hours. So
yeah.
I try to get, upgraded.
But I just read a scientific study confirming what we've always thought, which is that jet lag is worse west to east than east to west.
West to east. Yes, of course it's so.
So if you're heading into the sun, it's worse than if you're going with the sun.
I disagree on that one.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I got it backwards.
I think you got it backwards because I get more jet lagged when I'm going to New York than when I come home to L.A.
That's heading into the sun. You're headed east. Going to New York, that's worse jet lag. You're going against the sun. Going with the sun is less jet lag. Yeah,
without a doubt. Without a doubt.
I don't know why that is. I don't even understand how jet lag works.
Well, and if you go to Australia, you're definitely going to get jet lagged because you usually leave here at night and you arrive there in the morning, and then you got to stay awake the whole day. And, you know, jet lag's kryptonite is usually the sunlight. You got to get out, go for a walk, take a real light.
Somebody sent me a whole book devoted to this. He said, I was a traveler for years. This actually cures jet lag, but it involved changing your diet for like 10 days before you fly. You had to starve yourself alternately with feeding yourself. It was complicated. And I just thought, I can't do this. I'm just going to suffer. But the reason I mention that is never had worse jet lag than flying. For some reason, this is the opposite direction. Flying to Australia from San Francisco, I was useless for a whole week. I couldn't do anything.
Yeah. It's a pattern. Once you get in the bad habit, you got to do it the first night. Otherwise, you're messed up.
So, usually Johnny joins us with an app and a website. And, of course, I've used up all your time. But no, go ahead. We got a couple minutes left.
Okay. So, there's a website called new one. It's called Joey Travel, speaking of Australia. Joey travel.com.
Okay.
They're based in San Francisco. And it's a brilliant idea. So let's say you want to go to a city, but you don't know anyone. You don't have a huge Facebook following or Twitter. So what you do is you can log on to here and you can meet a local for a drink.
Oh, I like that.
To get, you know, a lay of the land or just to have a friend in the city. So it's cheap. It's $20. It ranges from $20 to $75 depending. And it includes a drink for each of you. And you go to the local's favorite bar or restaurant or cafe or whatever you want to do. I think it's brilliant. And if you're with more than one person, they charge an additional $15.
But this is just basically kind of connecting. It's like a dating service for travelers.
No, it's not dating though. I didn't take it as dating at all.
No. I don't mean dating. No. Because you want to. I think part of the fun, and I'm always shy, but part of the fun of traveling is meeting people. Locals and connecting.
Right.
And I'm always shy, so something that will help me do that That's great.
I mean, if you can get a local perspective and they give you the insider tips on where to go, where to eat, things like that, it'll make your trip so much better. So I love this idea. It just came out. So check out joeytravel.com.
And if you're a local
and you can make some money.
Yeah, and have a drink.
You're not making much money, but
no, but have
it's
fun.
Really about meeting people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like this idea.
And I got another quick app for you.
Okay.
This one is called Touch Blur. T-O-U-C-H Blur. B-L-U-R. So, you know, a lot of times when you're traveling, you're posting photos and people post some dumb photos like you know, pictures of their tickets, of their airplane tickets.
Don't do that.
They got upgraded or
they
their
can
hotel
scan
room
the barcode
number.
And they can find out all about you, right?
Exactly. So if you download this app, it's free on iOS. There's a similar app in Android, but you can just quickly touch out or blur
stuff.
Out.
Whoops.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's great for travelers. I mean, just the other day, my sister posted a picture of, you know, they're at their house, and you could see the house number. And I was like, why would you post that? So just blur it.
Right.
So
I post private information all the time. If I need this app, I'm gonna do it right now. I think I posted a lottery ticket once. It's a good thing I didn't win.
Well, it showed this one woman in Australia. She won the Melbourne Cup, and she posted it on her Facebook.
I remember that.
To just her friends, and someone read the barcode
and
took her winnings.
Cashed in.
Yeah.
That's it. You snooze, you lose.
Exactly.
Touch Blur. It's free on the it's on iOS. Do they have a Android version of it? I don't know.
The iOS is highly rated. The Android, I don't know if it's actually theirs. It wasn't as highly rated.
You know, you could get an editing program and do this. It's easier just to have this one program that does it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
JohnnyJet.com. That's his website. Nothing blurry there. It's all crystal clear, fully focused. You're now like, man, you're just like, you're in a country cottage industry here. You got the magazine, you got the website, you got the travel newsletters. This is great.
Twitch TV.
I hear you appear on the radio on a regular basis. And a wife and a new baby.
Yes.
How does he do it all, ladies and gentlemen? He's showing that a guy can have it all. JohnnyJet.com. Follow him on Twitter too, at JohnnyJet. And you know, does Twitter still do the lists? Because they said they were going to start getting rid of Twitter lists. Because Yusef,
I used them a week ago.
Good. Okay. Good. They're still there. Because the Twitter lists are great. He has lists of airlines. Lists. You start following some of the people on these lists, your Twitter feed will be really a travel savvy feed. What's your first column going to be for Alaska Airlines?
I already wrote it. It's in this month's issue. It's about credit card tips for global travelers. So
you see, if you like what you hear on the radio show, you can get more of Johnny Jet the next time you travel Alaska. I fly Alaska and Horizon a lot because that's my local airport down to L.A. So I'll be looking for you in
great
the magazine.
Airline, obviously.
Yeah, everybody loves Alaska.
And they're one of the few airlines that now give, you know, 1 mile per mile flown.
Aha.
So that's why they're most frequent flyers' favorite airline, besides their service.
Well, give my regards to Natalie and little baby Jack. It's Jack, right?
It is
little
Jack.
Jackie Jet? Okay.
Yeah.
Have a wonderful week, and we'll talk again next week. JohnnyJet.com. Say ya, Johnny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Hey, our show today brought to you by Ring. It's so funny. We were on vacation, and people were watching our house. And, of course, I have a Ring video doorbell on our house, so I was keeping an eye. And then the funniest thing is the doorbell rings yesterday, and it's a UPS guy, and he's got a big box. And I couldn't get to it fast enough to say, don't leave the box. Don't take it. Fortunately, he did leave it, and I kept an eye on it. It was my June oven came yesterday. I just love the Ring video doorbell. It's such a great solution. This, to me, is everything that the Internet of Things promises without any of the negatives. Well, I'll give you an example. They update the firmware automatically, so you're kind of going to always have the latest version of it. These guys have big investors, started with Richard Branson. He put in put together an investment group that put in, I think, $28 million. He just got another $109 million of investments from other big VCs. This is a company on the move. And they add products all the time. So I started with the original Ring. They now have the Ring Pro, which is slimmer. It's for wired doorbells only. The original Ring has a big battery, so it could work with wired or non-wired situations. They have the Ring Stick-Up Cam, which is a Ring video doorbell minus the doorbell. So it's the camera, HD camera, speaker and microphone. You put it in parts of the, you know, maybe like on the back where the Ring can't see what's going on. And the stick-up cam is great because you can get it with a solar panel that keeps it charged. So it runs it during the day and charges its battery up so at night it can run all night. All the Rings have night vision, so you see all the time what's going on. And the stick-up cam is weatherproof, completely wireless because it gets its power from the sun. Every Ring kit, and we're looking at the Ring of Security kits here, every Ring kit comes with a light-up Ring sign that lets bad guys know, hey, I'm watching, I got my eye on you. You can also, of course, connect your Ring video doorbell with your favorite smart locks and hubs for added convenience and monitoring and security. It could be part of your whole system. I just run it standalone and I love it. I just love knowing who's coming and going. It's got motion detection, so Pearson doesn't have to ring the doorbell. If they come up my front steps, I hear about it on my phone. You pair it to your smartphone. Uses Wi-Fi. And it's secure. Ring.com/tech guy. You get up to $150 off one of the Ring of Security kits. I'm seeing more and more Rings around. I saw LA Area Police Department was doing a partnership trying to put a Ring video doorbell every 10th house. That way, the neighborhood is covered. What a good idea. What a great idea. Oh, this is it. Wilshire Park. Here it is. So, 10% of homes, 1 in 10, were given Ring video doorbells. In 6 months, burglaries down 55%. So now they've got something called Ring Neighborhoods. I love it. I love what they're doing. Ring.com/tech guy. Save up to $150 on a Ring of Security kit. Ring.com/tech guy.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. And on the line right now, Brian from Lancaster, California. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. Welcome.
Thank you. Called you a few times. Make it quick. I believe I got hit with some malware on my Mac.
Golly, gosh darn. What makes you think that?
So what happened was I got a promotion to a new job. Was doing some stuff for insurance, clicked the link, sent me to the insurance website. When I got to the website, it told me that my Adobe Flash Player was out of date.
So of course like a good boy, you immediately fixed it by clicking the link that they offered you.
Well, so it gave me the pop-up, the download pop-up.
Yeah.
The URL didn't look proper.
Good.
So I closed Chrome, went back in there, clicked the...
Chrome, by the way, just as a good little tip to know, Chrome has Flash built in, so you will never have the wrong version of Flash if you're using Chrome.
Now I know. So... I went back onto the website again, and again, this is
same thing.
Insurance. This is an insurance website.
Yeah.
So I figured, well, I'm not, in the...
No, you're not on hacker.com, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I figured, okay, well, I guess I got to download it. I have the Mac set up where I have to enter my password to do any downloads. Of course, I put it in once I downloaded the program. And then I'm trying to go back onto the website, and now I'm getting all sorts of pop-ups. I look at the launch pad, and now I have like 5 different programs on there, and Safari and Chrome is almost unusable.
So in general on the Macintosh, while there is malware on the Macintosh, most of it's not malware the same degree of issue that you'll have on Windows. In this case, you have just some browser plugin got installed, and it shouldn't be too hard for you to find it and eliminate it.
Okay, so this is my issue is that I listen to you all the time. I'm sorry, Leo. I did not do a backup.
No, you were so close, though. You were suspicious.
Yeah, and you know, I you know, you've talked about the backup all the time, and
you don't need to go that far, honestly. You'll be able to recover your machine if you just find the browser hijackers. They'll be the browser plugins, they're extensions, and they'll be in the normal place that extensions get posted for Safari and Chrome. So it'll be in the library application support. You'll be able to just literally drag them to the trash and all should be good. It's not likely, unless there's something I'm missing, it's not likely that you got the more, you know, the scarier kind of Trojan horse malware on the Macintosh.
Well, my concern is not only, so it's on the browsers, but it downloaded programs. I'm looking at it right now, and I have a Mac Keeper and a Mega Backup.
Yeah, Mac Keeper is kind of one of these in the middle kind of a program. I'm not a fan of Mac Keeper. They are a utility, but there's been lots of talk about how they also bring in additional kind of things like toolbars and stuff. What's the other name?
Mega Backup.
Yeah. I don't want it on there.
And
yeah.
So my you know, I haven't really used the Mac aside from browsing and doing here minimal things with Pages and stuff like that. Now that I got the promotion, now I really need it. So I have all my photos backed up to the cloud. I have some other stuff. I'm probably going to lose some stuff. So I did a little research. I did the command R on startup. But the Time Machine, obviously, I never did a backup, so I don't have a previous point, not like Windows where you have a restore point and I can go back.
Is all your data safe on there? Like, is there data on the Mac that you still need?
Yeah, not really.
Okay.
I mean, I'm
copy. Here's it's very simple. Copy anything that you need off the Mac. And then you're going to reboot the Mac. And as you said, hold down Command R and you're going to go into the recovery. And what you're going to do is you don't have to do this, but obviously you want to, and it's an easy thing on a Mac to do. And you know, you're right. Given that I don't know what's on there, let's be prudent. You've got everything backed up. Once you're in the recovery mode on the Mac, run the disk utility and format the thing. Delete everything.
Okay.
And then after that's done, you'll go back. It'll end up back on that same screen, and now you install the operating system. Are there applications on there that you need?
The only application that I have purchased that I wouldn't be able to restore from the App Store would be PhoneView that you recommended, which was wonderful.
But you have the serial number for that?
I can get it before I do all the process. Yeah,
get that serial number, and then you can just re-download it. All Mac software works the same way. You download the file, and if you paid for it, you unlock it. Nobody's doing disks anymore, so that's easy. If you have the serial number, you can reinstall it. You don't need. You probably don't need to do this. Mac Keeper, Mega Backup can be easily removed. There are browser plugins that got installed, those can be easily removed, and you'd be back to normal. But you know what? Since you want a clean machine, you want to know there's nothing on there, and this is going to take you an hour. It's just because OS. The nice thing about Apple is they allow you to install the operating system from the cloud. You
right.
don't have to have a copy of it. So it's a simple process with Command R, the recovery, format the drive. Get it completely cleaned off. Now there's nothing on there. And reinstall OS X. You could do that from the cloud, or Mac OS as they call it now. Might as well update it while you're at it. Restore your data. And now there's nothing on there.
Okay.
But seriously, yeah. Probably not necessary. But you're right. It's prudent because I don't know. No one knows exactly what happened to your system. Once you run a program from a bad guy, sky's the limit. Apple has such great protections that it's difficult for a bad guy to put something on your system other than these little things. These are, you know what, people don't call them malware because, like Mac Keeper and Mega Backup, because they are uninstallable. They're just annoyingware. They're adware But you agreed to install them, and you can't uninstall them, so they can't be called technically malware. Now, I'm going to call them malware because, in my opinion, malware is anything that changes the behavior of your computer against your will that you got tricked into installing. And so that's malware, in my opinion. Right. But they won't call it malware because you can't uninstall it.
Yeah, so, again, just my only concern was that if I did a backup of the hard drive to an external hard drive, that somehow that stuff was...
No, it's not going to... If you don't run that same program again, it's not going to copy over. You have, in the browser extensions, there's a few things you want to get rid of. Mac Keeper and Mega Backup both can be removed just by dragging them to the trash. You can clean it up, and if you really know what you're doing, I think you'll be fine. However, it's so... In fact, it might even be just easier to reformat your Mac and start over.
Right.
Just because it's all there. It's not like you have to gather anything.
Yep. Leo, thank you very much for your help. Can I have one more quick question? I've always had iPhones since iPhone 3 or 4, and I've always upgraded. On my photos, I have some old pictures or video files that Photos doesn't recognize no more. Now, I've taken all the... Whatever I've pictures or videos that I've ever taken that is on Photos, it's been with an Apple device.
They're just... those are corrupted files. It's not that they're incompatible. They got damaged.
Got it.
Anything you ever took with an Apple device can be seen in Photos. So, but files get damaged. You know, you take one little bit out of a file and it can be unreadable. That's all.
I see.
That's why we make backups.
Yes, sir.
You'll be making backups from now on, I suspect.
Yes, sir.
You'll be turning that time machine on from now on.
Yeah, okay.
Nothing to worry about. You know what? I like your prudence. You know, people in the chat room said, well, there's a malware bytes for the Mac. I do not like to recommend third-party tools. I don't think it's a good idea. I think you're better off just doing what I suggested. Reformat and reinstall, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, I've been trying to keep the computer clean.
Now it's really clean. Now it's that's crystal clean. And by the way, call that insurance company or send them an email saying they've been bit. That is a legitimate site, but somebody got a script on there that's installing malware. So that's something they should know about. So I'd give them a ring or send them a note saying, you know, you got malware in your system. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, smart routers, virtual reality. Did I mention that? 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. The website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Don't forget that. That's where everything I mentioned, links, all that stuff, we put that in there. There's no sign up. There's no fee. I don't charge you. I don't want to charge you. I don't want your email address. We do, I should mention, if you want to make a comment, we really love that because that just makes the site more valuable. If you have a better idea or you want to put a link into something you thought worked really well for you or an answer to a question, you could absolutely do that at the website, techguylabs.com. But for that, there's a little sign up thing. For the comments system. That way we keep spam out. That's basically all. We don't do anything with the email address. TechGuyLabs.com. Daniel is next in Glendora. How are things in Glendora?
Going well. It's good. Not raining here.
Yeah, was it raining earlier?
Yesterday it was.
Yeah.
It was just more like just kind of
misty.
Drizzle.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. That's pretty much the same up here. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm interested in either getting a MacBook Pro or maybe the 4K iMac for music production and video editing.
I think Macintosh, Mac OS is excellent for both. Great. You'll see Macs everywhere in recording studios. And a lot of movies were done for many years on Final Cut on the Macintosh. Of late, Apple has lost some of that business back to Windows and Adobe Premiere or Avid. But still, a lot of people, especially non-professional editing, the Apple platform is still really excellent. Now, I have to say, I'm not a big fan of the new MacBook Pros. I'm very disappointed. I did buy one. Yeah. I bought two. The touch bar is just doesn't work. It doesn't make any sense at all. And it's an added expense for no good reason. I would love to keep just the Touch ID and then bring back my function keys. Unfortunately, the high-end new MacBook Pros are all with the touch bar. They make a lower end without the touch bar, but it doesn't have the faster processors, the bigger memory, the speedier drives, all the things you probably want. So I'm having a hard time recommending MacBook Pros right now.
Well, they do have, I believe, the 2015 available still.
It's an older version. You could even get it refurb and save a couple of $100 on that. It's fine. You know, I was using a 2012 MacBook Pro till I got the new one. The new one doesn't seem particularly faster.
Sure.
So, you know, I mean, part of the reason Apple doesn't update its hardware as fast as it used to is Intel's chips have not really made a huge difference in terms of speed of performance.
Sure.
So I don't think you would go terribly wrong getting last year's MacBook. I do love, now you said 4K. Do you mean the 5K iMacs?
Well, the 5K is kind of more.
You don't need expensive. The big one, right?
Yeah, and it's you know, even the lowest model was still kind of expensive.
Yeah.
The 4K after kind of souping it up, it still is somewhat affordable.
Good. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. There probably will be new iMacs in the next 2 months.
Sure.
Just so you're aware of it, I really think that Apple has got to update their desktop Macintoshes this year, and likely in the spring when they announce new iPads.
But it might be dongle city, though, right?
Well, yeah, gosh, only knows what they're going to do. I'm not against Type C connectors or dongles. I mean, the Thunderbolt 3 sure. Type C connectors are fast; they're easy to use. Everything I have now has gone Type C. Even my phones are starting to use Type C, with the notable exception of the Apple's phone, which still is Lightning. I really think Type-C is a future. So I'm not so sure. Dead set against Type-C. You'll be, you know, and, you know, you'll have things hanging off your Mac anyway. You're going to have extra drives and things like that. So,
sure. What about processors? So as long as it's i7, you think it's good enough? Like, do I have to soup it up?
Yeah, like so, okay, one? So... Intel's, you know, we've gone through some generations of Intel chips. There was Haswell, then there was Skylake, and now there's Kaby Lake. In general, there's a few percentage points increase in performance, not a huge amount. And mm-hmm. most of the benefit of these newer chips is in power, the power curve, and that's mostly a benefit to laptops more than it is desktops, for sure. So I wouldn't have any problem. I guess you'd need an i7 for photo editing. You probably would want it for if you do. Are you doing music with a lot of tracks?
Yeah.
So that's where the difference in the i5 and the i7, it has a little more cache, but also the i7 has hyper threading, so it can do more threads. And that's something that'll make a big difference if you have a lot of tracks in a
sure.
music file. So, yeah, get an i7. I don't think a newer, like Kaby Lake, which is what we'll probably see this spring, would make a huge difference, frankly. So
okay.
if you can get a Skylake i7, it might even be Haswell at this point. I don't know if how on top of Intel's updates Apple is. Skylake had a lot of problems initially. Microsoft had huge problems with managing power on Skylake. They changed Intel changed everything and threw everybody for a loop. I think most of those bugs are worked out now though. So Skylake would be a good choice. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, I think you're on the right track. Apple charges a considerable premium to buy its hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Increasingly, I'm dissatisfied with that because I don't think they're doing anything that justifies that, frankly.
Sure.
But on the other hand, for what you're wanting to do, I think Windows probably isn't the best choice. So
sure.
You're stuck.
Sure.
You're stuck with the Apple tax.
I'm pretty much that.
Yeah. So you're right to kind of save money. You don't need the latest and greatest.
Okay. Okay.
It's not much improved at all.
Great.
Okay.
Great. Thank you so much.
Enjoy, Daniel. Nice to talk to you. I like talking to Mac fans. It's tough for us Apple aficionados. We don't want to admit it because for years we took a lot of guff from you Windows users, you know, for loving our high-priced, kind of precious little Macs.
But I always loved the Mac operating system. I always thought it was better. Apple made the greatest hardware. Sure, we had to pay 20, 30, 50% more for it than Windows, but it wasn't junky. It was good quality, and it was worth it. The Macs last a long time. But Apple, I think the iPhone warped Apple's kind of worldview. It has become so dominant. It's the number one moneymaker for Apple. It's what's made Apple the most valuable company in the world. It's what's put a lot of bucks in the pockets of Apple's, you know, shareholders and Apple employees and Apple executives. Their number two product now is Apple services, which are actually terrible. But Apple Music and Apple Pay and iCloud and all of that, last quarter, $24 billion business. And the Mac is, you know, after those two. Mac is less and less important to them. And I just feel like they're kind of giving it short shrift, and I'm very disappointed. The Touch Bar, the only thing it does for me, it doesn't save me time. It doesn't make things easier. The only thing it does for me is get in the way. I hit it by accident sometimes, and then things pop up on the screen that I don't want. I'm just typing. Or maybe I'm a sloppy typist. I don't know. But it's right beneath the backspace key. Just a little bit over, and you're going to hit it. And things are going to happen. Siri's going to pop up, or your notifications window is going to open up. And it just completely stymies you until you close it away, and then you can go back to typing. That's a terrible design. Something that, you know, it's eye candy, but it makes it harder to use the computer, not easier. That's not good. So it's a little disappointing. It's a little hard to admit. Because I still have that, you know, little flitter flutter in my heart. For that Apple stuff, it's good stuff. Except it's not such good stuff anymore. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Larry in Sherman Oaks. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Imagine two blind callers in one day.
Well, you know, that's the magic of radio.
Yeah.
Right? We have a lot of blind listeners. I think that's great.
Sure. Well, with the new December 19th FCC law about set-top boxes and accessibility, I have Dish Network, and they have their WALL-E, and it's now talking. When I first got it, though, it only talked through the HDMI jacks. Now it talks through the RCAs, which is
nice.
Yeah.
So you could have a little separate speaker for it.
Well, you know, it's not that. The audio of the channels talk through everything, but the instructions only talk through the HDMI jack.
Ah, okay.
And they fixed it, or at least it seems like they did.
Good.
Meanwhile, I bought a Roku back in December, which has speech. And so I went to Best Buy, and we got the thing hooked up at home, because they didn't have a way to do that at Best Buy. They can only demo Apple products, it looks like, or something.
Jeez.
Yeah. So we get it home, and there's no speech, there's no accessibility option. We come to find out that it was version 7.22, so we upgrade to 7.5, which has the speech. Everything was going fine. I ignore the unit for 2 hours while we're trying to work on my Linux machines here, and the Roku goes back to 7.22.
Oh.
No speech. And
it worse, downgrades itself?
Yeah, and worse, you can't even contact these Roku folks. Their phone number in Los Gatos has one line. The second, if you call it with a second line, you get a 60 IPM busy signal.
Oh no, one line.
One line, and they never answer it.
Oh boy.
You know, and as if that weren't bad enough, you go to roku.com/accessibility in four different text-based Linux browsers, and you get like three or four generic nag links about JavaScript or something, and you can't see it.
Well, you know, it's the second time we've been talking about accessibility on this show. It's so important. Computing can be completely accessible to blind users between screen readers, and I've seen Braille readouts, which are so amazing. But he's got to support it. Websites have to support it. Technology has to support it. I think there's even a legal requirement in many cases, thanks to the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Right, but the people who make these websites just assume
they don't pay any attention.
They assume and they require you to be in a graphical browser
terrible?
Windows. And not all of us want to be in a graphical browser.
No, I don't blame you.
You know, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And we talked about this last year, the year before, whatever. I mean, I used to be able to get to the printer-friendly links of newspapers, magazines, if
right.
I would. And it's all JavaScript now.
You don't see printer-friendly anymore, do you? That's right.
I do, but it's hidden in JavaScript.
Yeah.
You look in the source code, you can't get to it. And but
I don't know what happened. There was early in the web, there was a strong push for accessibility, and there were tools like Bobby. Remember Bobby? You could
yeah.
run your website against, and Bobby was a little English
right.
police officer with a baton and a wagging finger, and he'd tell you, "Well, you need to work on this, this, and this, and to make your site accessible."
There's a replacement. I don't remember what it's called. I looked one day.
Yeah.
And there is, but my favorite, of course, back in the 90s, there were Gopher servers.
Yeah, that was all text, right?
It was no toolbar, no links, no annoying. Oh, it's just brutal. You're reading an article, and it's like related links, and there's like Facebook, and all. It's like.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to go to related links or Facebook, I'll do that.
Well, and it's also driven, of course, by ad tech. And I think a lot of this is, and it's been the bane of the web, because it makes web pages giant, but also makes them full of JavaScript so that they could blast these ads at you.
Mm.
And I think it's very unfortunate. Now, there's no reason for Roku's support page to have JavaScript on it. I'm looking at the page right now. It is a plain text page. There's not even any images on it.
It's roku.com/accessibility.
Yeah, I was looking at it. And I mean, obviously, I can see it in my I'm running Chrome on Linux, and I can see it, but that's because I can see it.
But that's a graphical browser.
Yeah, there's no excuse for this. It's just text. There's no excuse for it not to be a plain text page.
Yeah, but can you try it with links, LYNX, or one of the other?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to take your word for it that they've messed it up. I'm just saying there's no reason for them to mess it up because there's no features in here that require JavaScript.
Mm,
so
yeah.
they've blown it. But anyway, I can read it. You want me to read it to you?
Sure, if you like.
You need to have OS 7.5 to enable audio guide. I don't know why your Roku rolled back. They do have a page on how do I use audio guide. Now that may be more accessible. Gosh, you'd hope it would be. That's a long URL though. support.roku.com/article/231584647-how-do-i-use-audio-guide. And then for extra points, they put a dash at the end of the URL for no apparent reason. So anyway, all we can do is just hope Roku listens.
Right. Now, like Roku Channel, I forgot, there's some other Roku pages where they're a little better, but it you could not really find a good list of channels that they have.
Yeah,
I mean,
they're...
I don't know. This has been kind of frustrating. I mean, I have...
There is an email address, and I'm glad to see it. And I'm going to give you the phone number and the email address for Stephen Kay. He's their accessibility contact. He's vice president and general counsel. And it's accessibility@roku.com.
Okay.
And his phone number is 408-556-9391. And if you could read the page... If your screen reader could read, if the page were accessible, you'd have access to that information.
That's right. Well,
but Stephen, you're not making your page accessible for crying out loud.
My screen reader is SpeakUp in Linux, and it reads just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Anyway, they should offer a text only page, and everybody. And I would just hope that people would just pay attention to the fact there's no reason why any company would want to cut off its users. For any reason, make your page work for everybody.
Mm.
It's not that much more effort, even.
No, and then, like I think I told you a time or two ago, there's some places that will actually default to a mobile site if they see you're running something else.
I know, it's too bad.
That's not.
I mean, I have to say, there aren't a lot of you running links anymore.
Right.
I love it that you are, and I actually installed links. You can still install it, and I run it from time to time. It's not a great experience, but if you're blind, I bet it's a lot better experience than trying to use a graphical browser.
Oh yeah, but there are graphical browsers in Linux. I think Orca is the one that people
talk about. Orca is an open source screen reader program. Yeah. Well, at least you got the word out. Maybe somebody, maybe this guy Stephen Kay is listening and
He's just down there in Los Gatos.
Yeah, that's where I called the main number. It's, I won't give that out over
Try that 408 number. That's an accessibility number. At least they make that, you know, available. I wish they made it available in an accessible fashion. That's kind of strange. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Joe in Corona, California. Hi, Joe. You're next.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing all right. I noticed your strawberry-flavored
record?
Vinyl disc.
Yes.
I'm wondering if you can get a strawberry-flavored MP3.
No, I'm afraid that's one of the things we gave up when we moved to digital delivery is no sense.
Yeah, how sad.
Yeah, I guess I can live without strawberry-flavored vinyl. But you know what I miss really is the liner notes.
Oh, I know.
We're of an age. I bet you used to do. Yeah, I used to do this. I'd put on my headphones. Remember in the old days, sit in front of the stereo, read the album cover while you're listening to the music.
Sure.
I don't know what
you can sort of do that with a CD, but you got to need a magnifying glass.
Yeah. Oh, hey, people don't even buy CDs anymore. You're still in the Stone Age now, man. It's all digital.
I download everything.
Yeah, although I have a friend who buys CDs. He says it gives him a backup version. He's got the highest quality. Thing is, if you never move, I guess it's okay. But, man, if you've ever moved books or CDs.
Or LPs.
Or LPs. It's a pain.
I've got a stack about 4 feet high.
Oh, man. You know, it's so interesting that kids today love vinyl again, and they're bringing back turntables. It's just, I guess it's nostalgia. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to sell them.
Yep. You probably can find a market.
Well, I believe so. Anyway, I have an old XP computer that I've already contacted Fujitsu, and they said they can't bring it up any higher than Vista.
Okay. Which is not much higher.
Not very much higher.
Yeah.
I use it mostly to sync up my Windows Mobile 6 phone.
Wow.
PDA.
That's worse than vinyl.
No, actually, it works really good.
Does it really? Wow.
Oh, yeah. My phone company called me and said, we don't support your phone anymore. And I said, you don't support 3G?
No. In fact, you know.
We support that. That's all right.
If you had the old iPhone, you would actually not be able to use it, original iPhone, because it was 2G only. And most of these networks are phasing their 2G networks out.
Yeah. This was a very expensive phone 10 years ago.
Yeah. No, I remember it. I had one, too.
Yeah. The HTC Advantage.
Oh, yeah, that was a nice phone, yeah.
Well, I mean, it weighs a ton, but what the heck.
Battery life's great, though, I bet you.
Sure, battery life is good. I charge it whenever I can. It's got a great screen because it's got the old-style wider 5-inch screen.
Yeah.
Which I absolutely love. Anyway, I use that to sync with Outlook. And then what I'm thinking of doing, because I play Facebook games, is I'd like to take my old laptop, put in an SSD, and make it Linux and see if
I can play Facebook games. Now, I'm not sure I'd waste money on the SSD for that because it might make a difference. You know, it's got an older bus. It's probably a SATA 1 bus, which is, you know, the SSD is way faster than the data bus on that thing.
Right.
So, yeah, but you get the benefit of no access time, so it might make a difference. But Linux is a very good idea.
Okay, what version of Linux would work best with either Chrome or Firefox or both?
I use Chrome and Firefox. Actually, I don't use Chrome. I use the open source version of Chrome or Chromium. You can use Chrome, but I just prefer Chromium. It's exactly the same. And Firefox comes with most Linux distributions. So you're set on browsers. Most Linux distributions come with a full Word-compatible Office suite.
Right.
Called LibreOffice. I use Linux more than any other operating system these days. Now, older hardware, you're going to want to get a Linux designed for older hardware.
Right.
And that means it'll be lighter weight. It'll use less RAM because memory is probably scarce on that old machine.
Well, I think it's maxed out, but that may only be 4 gig.
Yeah, if that. I would look at, so Ubuntu is the kind of the most popular form of Linux out there.
Right.
UBUNTU. There are lightweight versions of Ubuntu. Xubuntu, which is at xubuntu.org, and Lubuntu, both are designed for older machines, lighter weight hardware. Though they call them lightweight, fast, but the reason they're fast is because they don't expect a lot of resources. So they're probably better for older machines. Lubuntu,
It uses a desktop that's very lightweight called LXDE. Uh-huh. Xubuntu uses XCFE. Those are both desktops that don't take as much memory as more modern desktops like Cinnamon or Unity.
Still graphic.
Yeah, desktop. But they're still graphical. They work fine. They work better than Windows XP for sure on that hardware.
Okay, that sounds excellent. You said something last week about your Pixel phone.
Yeah.
And something about it being able to transfer or jump between carriers.
Well, I use a Pixel phone with Google's Fi, which is Google's own mobile network. And Fi is unique because it will work. Google leases time from both Sprint and T-Mobile and U.S. Cellular. And it will choose one of those three or Wi-Fi, whatever's strongest, depending on where you are. So we took a little vacation, couple of day vacation, went up to the wine country, and my T-Mobile phone wouldn't work up there because T-Mobile doesn't have a good enough signal, but my Pixel would because it just switched over to Sprint.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking about moving up to Oregon, and I know that the AT&T and the Verizon don't really work up on the mountain where I'm from.
Well, the problem is, in order to do this, you have a new carrier. It's not AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, or anybody. It's Google.
Right.
And if you go to fi.google.com, you can read up on it. It's actually, I think, the best cellular carrier in the U.S. The pricing is, I think, very sensible. You charge $20 a month for unlimited voice calls in the U.S. and unlimited text messaging. And then they charge you $10 per gigabyte of data or fractional. So if you use 1,000 megabytes, what is it? Gigabytes, 1,000. If you use 100 megabytes, you'll only pay $1.
Right.
So you pay by the data used. And I think it's very good. It travels very nicely. It works overseas, same price.
Can you use it as a Wi-Fi hotspot?
You can. That's built in.
Huh.
But you have to use a Google phone and probably a Pixel, and good luck finding one. I don't know what's going on with Google. They had to deny yesterday. They denied that they had stopped production. They said, no, we're still making them. Well, good luck finding them. What are you making, one a week?
Yeah, I was looking at the Pixel phones online. The only downside that I could see is that they don't offer an extension card, a slot to be able to put a card in.
Yeah, Google's against the SD cards for some reason. But they make, it's very hard to find. They make 120. I bought the 128 gigabyte a Google phone, and that's plenty for me. I don't even come close to filling that up. Yeah,
I would think that'd be more than enough.
They make a 32, I think, and a 128. There's no 64, which would be probably the sweet spot. I may be wrong on that, but you can find out more at fi.google.com. In fact, I think if you buy it through Google Fi, you might have a shot at actually getting it.
Okay, now that's an Android operating system, right?
Yeah, it's Android. It's the latest Android. The other reason I like it is because Google keeps it up to date.
Okay, sounds excellent. I'll have to check that out because they don't have the others up there, and I'm going to probably have to switch in some point anyway.
Yeah, I think so. I think your Windows phone is...
It does everything I want it to do. It's a little slower than some of the new ones.
Mostly it's the apps you're missing, right? Like. Mostly if you wanted to use modern apps, you couldn't, and that's really the...
Oh, yeah, that's true. There's very few, but I have all the old ones. I have...
A lot of people don't care. As long as you have a calendar, contacts...
Yeah, I have programs. I don't have apps.
Yeah, you have programs. That's how old that phone is.
That's how old it is.
Hey, nice to talk to you.
Paperweight.
Yeah. but it's solid. And you know what? Battery life is the one thing we've really sacrificed. That and, frankly, I don't remember if your Advantage had a little antenna protuberance, but the old phones actually had antennas on them. And that really did make it, they were better reception. Hey, the Gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo, coming up right after this. They're just going to standardize on the Pixel launcher, that's all. They have three launchers now. They have the AOSP launcher, they have the Google Now launcher, and they have the Pixel launcher. So the Pixel launcher does everything the Google Now launcher does. I know it's not going to make any difference, Colin. Hello! Take it deep.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Oh, yeah. What is that, tic-tac-toe shirt?
Yeah. But it's all good. Square marks the spot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I like this shirt.
No, it's very nice.
It's an abstract.
Not unlike yourself.
Yes. I'm very abstract. Very abstract. I guess I don't have anything to ask you.
Okay. Oh, thank you for forwarding that picture of Siskel and Ebert.
Wasn't that awesome?
Yeah. And so basically...
Siskel and Ebert reading Mad Magazine.
Yes. And I asked John Ficarra where that originated, and he said that after Mad did the first satire of the two of them, they sent that to Mad, and then Mad ran it on the list.
Because they didn't want to admit that they were actually reading Mad Magazine. So,
Roger was a shit.
Roger Ebert's got Playboy inside of a Mad Magazine, and Siskel's pretending to read Science Digest, but he's got Mad Magazine inside of that.
Yeah,
that's kind of a funny picture. I like
it. It's very funny. Yeah. Very. And Roger was a big Mad Magazine fan.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah, I met him at a preview, and he said, "Dick, I got to tell you, you helped me get started in this reading Mad satires. I thought I want to do this, but I want to do it in print." So it was very
flattering.
That's
nice.
Yeah, very flattering.
Those guys were great.
They were.
Wish we could go back. Sometimes I wish we could go back to an earlier time.
Well, you're the computer whiz, can't you? Can't you do something?
I know. All this progress, man. I don't know. I don't know. And here's, of course, the article that you were talking about. I don't know if this is the original one. Sam Viviano?
Yes.
Is that it? Ghostbusters?
They've been in there so many times. Yeah. I'm not sure if that's the first, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's them at the beginning of the Ghostbusters parody.
Yes. Yeah. And then I remember we used to use them if we wanted to do a really fast satire of something and not a three-page. We would have them reviewing it, and that way we could just do three one-page satires on movies.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so funny. You'll be here for the Giz Fizz after the screensavers?
I will indeed, sir.
All righty,
who's
all righty. Megan is.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Here's John Hodgman.
Oh, and Andy. Thank you for letting us use Andy last week. He was very, he's great.
Andy likes to be used, I see. Pick of the litter. Mads, this is funny. Oh, this is the Switch campaign. You did a parody of the Apple Switch campaign, or at least a bit of it. Yeah. I was just doing a search for Siskel and Ebert in Mad Magazine, and now I've gone down a rabbit hole. All right, here we go.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Whoa, mercy me. I love it. Mercy, mercy me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. But don't call right now. We're in the middle of a Mad Minute with Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He's our gadget guru, or our, as one might say, gizmo wizard or gizwiz.
Yes, yes, exactly, hey, exactly. Dickie. But today I am Captain Dick.
Really?
The New York Boat Show.
Ah.
So Leo, have I got something for you?
Not only does Dick write regularly for Mad Magazine, he writes for boating magazines because he's an avid boater. You had a cigarette boat, you had a house boat, now you just have a work boat.
Yeah. Well, You're going to want this. Okay, so right. Sea Ray, big name in boats.
Yep.
They introduced something I've never seen in a boat before. So it's like almost 40 foot. It's like 39.6 and 12 foot plus beam. But back at the aft of the boat, the side of the boat, they call it the wing, folds down hydraulically.
Ooh.
90 degrees.
Oh.
And the transom folds down.
Yes.
So you now have your own entertainment swim platform. Now, up at the gauges, you have two 12-inch Raymarine glass displays, and then you just make your dashboard be whatever you want. I want my sounder to be this big. I want this to be this big.
So it's all software.
All software, wow. Exactly. And wow. Then you have your joystick steering.
Okay.
Which is you can actually drive the boat sideways.
So it has bow thrusters?
It has this one. You don't actually need the bow thrusters because there's a little computer in there that can run and vary the speed and shift it. It's all done automatically.
So does it have pods instead of propellers?
So one of them does have pods. This one actually manages to do it with propellers.
Wow.
Is get the boat to go wow. sideways.
So how much is this fine Sea Ray going to send me back?
The guy said they hadn't priced it yet as the first showing, but it would be in the $400,000 to
$500,000 range. Oh, my goodness. That's a little expensive for me. But
well, yeah, okay. Well, you know, it's a
boat's more expensive than – yeah, it's a business boat.
It's a business.
We got a river. Our boat's more expensive than cars because that's expensive.
Oh my gosh, Leo. An outboard motor. I'm negotiating a new outboard motor. It's $25,000.
For the motor?
The motor.
Wow.
The motor. Yeah.
I guess I won't be doing any boating anytime soon.
Well.
Now, so these Sea Rays, these are like sport boats.
Yes, yes. Well, they've been building mainly cabin cruises. This is their first kind of – they're actually – the guy told me they call it – it is the SLX 400, but they're going to rename it the Entertainer. So this is like their first boat. It has dual grills. You can take 16 of your friends out.
Oh, my.
A sliding sunshade to cover the people in the back.
I do. I've always wanted a boat, I have to say.
I know you do. Yeah, I know you do.
But I don't,
you wanted to go to sea with a trawler.
I still do. I still have fantasies of, I don't know, sailing the Mediterranean in my tugboat.
Yeah, well, you don't want this for sailing the Mediterranean.
No.
But
this is for bringing out the people out into the, you know, and for a nice time in the bay. Kind of.
Great time.
Yeah.
A great time.
It's so funny because cruise ships now often have those foldable kind of platforms behind the ship that they can have parties on the back there.
Bringing like people down to the level of the sea.
Well, you brought me down to the level of poverty, but I thank you very much. You'll find Dick at gizwiz.biz. You should go there because that's a great place to go for the What the Heck Is That contest. It's a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. You also find links to all the things he mentions on this show. That's the big Gizwiz Visits the Tech Guy button. Let me just take a look at the What the Heck Is It contest this month and see what it's a little house. It's an ant house for ants because it's got steps and a living room. But then it's weird because the steps go up and then you fall into the living room. But ants don't mind that because they're little. They're little, yeah. And they don't fall so far.
Yeah. It's so, a sunken living room. Have you not heard of that?
It's a sunken living room for ants. If you can look at that and say what it is, you'll be eligible for one of 12 autographed copies of Mad Magazine. But if you don't know, that's okay, because there's 24 for the best wacky answer. Details at gizwiz.biz. Don't forget Stick's great weekly podcast he does with Chad Johnson. That's called the Weekly Gizwiz, and you'll find it at gizwiz.tv.
Perfect.
Dickie D, thank you so much.
Yes, sir. I'll see you next week.
You're down to one boat now, right?
I am down to one work boat. Yep.
Is it the case, as they say, that a boat is just basically a money pit? You might as well just burn your money if you own a boat.
Well, you know, the thing is, I think the day after you own it, it devalues by about 40%.
Really, no so, good excuse for owning a boat.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, the thing is to hold on the boat for years. Like, my work boat's coming up to 12 years. I'm just repowering it so it'll work, seem like a new boat.
What work do you do in your work boat?
Sit there and have lunch or go down there and have dinner. It is my country home.
It's your country home. He doesn't have a car. He lives in Manhattan. He's got a work boat.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I'll go down to tomorrow. It's like going out. I'm sitting on the Hudson River.
Beautiful.
There you
go. What could be better? What do you even need an engine for?
Well, to go over to Jersey and look back at where I live.
Dick D. Bartolo, gizwiz.biz. Thanks, Dickie D. We'll see you next week.
Buddy.
Larry San Bernardino, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Couldn't be better. What can I do for you?
I was curious. I just picked up a Raspberry Pi 3. I'm not sure if you're familiar with those.
Oh, what fun. Oh, I am. I have a few of them. I love them.
Now, the thing is that I'm actually using it as a smaller computer inside. I'm like browsing.
$35. I tell parents, if your kid is, you got a 12-year-old bugging you, I want a computer. Give them $35. They buy a Raspberry Pi, kid. Good luck. Have fun. It runs Linux. It's a full operating system. You could use it as a home theater PC if you want. There's a lot of different ways you could use it. What are you using your Raspberry Pi for?
Exactly what you just stated, mostly just for video viewing and web browsing.
You know, it's for kids, it's great because there's it's because it's Linux, got a full programming environment on it. It's got a special version of Minecraft available that you can program in Python. A lot of kids, because they love Minecraft, get motivated and learn how to program. It's just great. And the price is right. Now, $35 doesn't include a screen, a monitor, you know, a keyboard or a mouse. You got to, you know, it'll cost you closer to $100 once you equip it as a full computer, but that's not bad.
Now, I was curious because now there are different variants out there.
Oh, yeah.
Many competitors.
Exactly.
Now, my main question was, now, the ARM, the CPU, the ARM, I guess ARM Cortex.
It's an ARM processor, right? The Cortex, yep.
Yeah. Now, what is your opinion on those? Because the fact that I'm seeing variants that are coming out with octa-core processors.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. That's just that's a buzzword. You don't need 8 cores any more than you probably need 4 cores. ARM is a low-power, low-cost processor. Almost all smartphones use ARM processors, and it's perfectly fine. I don't see any reason to get more power than the Raspberry Pi 3. It's great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you. Sorry, we ran out of time there, but I think, you know, there are other companies making similar computers, you know, inexpensive computers on a chip. There's a lot of them out there. Where you might want more processor power is if you're trying to do home theater and it's not playing back like compressed files, things like that.
Okay. Now, is there any boards that you would recommend? Raspberry Pi?
Well, are you going to use it as a home theater PC? Is that your goal?
Well, I like something a little bit more heavy use, something I can use a lot of processes because I've frozen the Pi several times.
Have you really? All right. Well, the thing about that I like about the Pi is it's well supported.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, the price is right. But I just saw a new one come out that has more horsepower. What was it called? I mean, everybody wants to compete with the Pi. It's such a huge success.
Exactly.
And I think the advantage of it is that it has, really good third-party support. However, if you're kind of a do-it-yourselfer, if you don't, you know, you're comfortable doing that. I'm looking now real quickly to see. I mean, I see a ton of them. There was one just announced, might have been 8 cores. They're all using ARM, by the way, because ARM is cheap. You shouldn't assume, I mean, it is a cheap computer. I mean, don't assume that it's, it's the Asus makes something called a Tinker Board.
Oh, I've never heard that.
Yeah, the Tinker Board just is a new one that just came out. It's, you know, its biggest feature is it has 2 gigs of RAM instead of 1. And frankly, more RAM may be the issue rather than more cores. It's still a quad-core Cortex A17, which is
there, oh, my apologies, go on.
It's a little faster.
Okay.
There's the Udu is what I was looking at. And
how do you spell it? Oh, Intel. Yeah. So Intel wants to compete against ARM, but they don't have an ARM architecture. They have a CISC architectures. How do you spell it? Ooh?
It's U-D-O-O.
Udu. And that's from Intel?
No, I'm not sure if it's an Intel.
Oh, it's Intel. It's an Arduino. Wait a minute. That can't be right. Is it really? 125. Oh, yeah. Look at that. It is x86. Yeah. So I'm not crazy about x86 architecture for this kind of stuff, but yeah, that's interesting.
That's the one question I also had was x86 versus the 64, you know. Obviously, you're going to get faster than 64.
What you need to know is why your stuff is freezing. Is it that you've got too much, that you don't have enough bandwidth, not enough RAM? It may not be the processor.
It's mostly going to be the RAM, but with the Udu, it comes with 8 gigabytes of RAM on their best board.
Yeah. So. Well, this is a Kickstarter, so it's not out yet.
That's exactly why I'm curious.
So I wouldn't, I've been burned a number of times now. A lot of people, you know, a lot of Kickstarters have the best intentions, but don't end up. So quad core Intel, which means it's probably a Atom processor. 8 gigs of RAM, 32. Yeah. It's an Intel Curie.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Huh. And they do offer a Celeron and an Atom version. Oh, they even have a Pentium version. Wow. Well, yeah. this is more horsepower. The other issue is, well, you know, how well supported is it? It's obviously going to be running Linux. Have they written drivers for all the hardware that you'd want to use?
Not sure about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously they're not going to be, well, yeah. Images are for illustrative purposes only. Actual product. They don't even have a product yet. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not an expert on this category. I mean, I played with it, but I'm not sure what the most powerful of these is.
Well, I thought I'd just ask you in general because you are quite knowledgeable, and so I figured maybe you might have a little bit.
You know who I'm going to ask is Aaron Newcomb, who is one of our regulars. He's a maker. He runs the Benicia Makerspace, and so he deals with a lot of these different processors. He's used them all, you know, the stamps and the going back to the stamps and, you know, he's used Raspberry Pi for a lot of projects, Arduinos. This looks impressive, and obviously this is designed for people who say, you know, there's not enough horsepower in these little computers. I'm willing to pay, you know, five times more. The Pentium one is like $250.
Understand the question. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you pretty much answered my entire question.
Okay.
Just stick with the more RAM.
Yeah, try this Tinker. That's kind of interesting. That's also cheap, the Asus Tinker. And Asus is going to put something together that's pretty good. It's still an ARM. I mean, it's very similar. It's almost a Raspberry Pi clone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it is capable of 4K, which tells me it's got a lot more horsepower. If you do a search for a Asus Tinker, you'll see some reviews from Ars Technica and others. It's a very fast a GPU as well. So it's really designed for home theater PC with 4K. It's got gigabit Ethernet on it. A lot of stuff better than the Raspberry Pi. It's a little more expensive. They say 55 pounds, so that's like $75. So.
Okay, well, I'll check that out. 4K video if it's 4K.
Yeah, that means it's got a lot of throughput. You know? And that, I guess the 2 gigs of RAM helped that as well. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts. For this show, we talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.